The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go right to page 8, Who's Who. We're going to go to our second line. And here we start off with Ayoka Lee, Kansas State Wildcats center. Her height is 6'6". She was born August 12, 2000, hometown Byron, Minnesota. After a season in which she averaged 19.7, 8.6 rebounds, and 2.8 block shots per game, Lee announced she would return to Kansas State for her fifth year of eligibility. A four-time All-Big 12 selection, she set the NCAA Division I single-game record with 61 points against Oklahoma in 2022. But did you know the record for the most points in Division I men's game was set in 1954 by Furman's Frank Selvey, who had 100 points against Newberry College? Jamar Chase, Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver. His height is 6 feet. His weight is 205 pounds. He was born March 1st, 2000, hometown Harvey, Louisiana. Chase has exceeded 1,000 yards receiving in each of his first four NFL seasons. Through the first 13 games of 2024, he led the league with 1,319 yards and 93 catches. Chase is one of two players, Julio Jones is the other, to have 250-yard receiving in more than one game. Did you know, though? The record for receiving yard by a rookie was set in 2023 by Puka Nacua of the Chargers, 1,486, who surpassed Bill Gorman, 1,473, for the Houston Oilers in 1960. And finally, we have Matty Zimmer, Northwestern Wildcats midfielder. Her height is 5'5". She was born September 28, 2001, hometown Hershey, Pennsylvania. In the 2024 NCAA championship game against St. Joseph's, Zimmer had 2 goals and an assist as Northwestern won 5-0. For the season, she had 10 goals and 12 assists. Zimmer, who was first called up to the United States national team as a 17-year-old, was a member of Team USA at the Olympics in Paris last summer. Zimmer has stated that her dream job is running out a cat sanctuary or running a cat sanctuary on a tropical island. She also can juggle and has met the president of Ireland. We're going to continue the series, Great Start Year, but Curse Reversed. The Minnesota North Stars, 1990-91. Like the rest of the teams on this page, the North Stars got off to a bad start. They were 5-15-5 at one point. Even when they got better, they weren't actually good. Minnesota snuck into the bloated NHL playoffs with a dismal 27-39-14 record. But Brian Bellows on the right and company just kept winning in the playoffs, reaching the Stanley Cup Finals. They took a 2-1 lead on the Pittsburgh Penguins before their bubble burst with 3 straight losses. San Diego Chargers, 1982. Coming off a 4-12 season, expectations weren't exactly high in San Diego in 1992. A 0-4 start sounded just about right, and things only looked to get worse considering the team was playing with backup quarterback Stan Humphries above, who had 1 TD pass and 8 interceptions in those 4 losses. But a Week 5 win over the Seattle Seahawks snapped Humphries out of his funk. San Diego went 11-1 the rest of the way, winning the AFC West and becoming the only team in NFL history to make the playoffs after a 0-4 start. Chicago Sky 2021. Before the 2021 season, Chicago area native Candace Parker on the right became a free agent after 13 seasons with the Los Angeles Sparks. She chose to sign with the team near her hometown, where she said, "I first fell in love with the orange ball." There was nothing to love about her decision after 9 games, though. The Sky were a miserable 2-7, but Parker and her teammates rallied and fought their way into the playoffs, where they caught fire and won 8 of 10 games en route to becoming the lowest-seeded team to win the WNBA title. Moving on to page 19, World Champs, 3-16 start, the Boston Braves. Between 1909 and 1913, the Braves finished last in the National League 4 times, so their woeful start to the 1914 season didn't come as a surprise. Boston was 3-16 at one point, and in mid-July, they were still dead last in the National League. Then the team, which included players called Rabbit and Possum, suddenly sprang to life. The Braves didn't just win the pennant, they did so handily, finishing 10.5 games ahead of the second-place Giants. In the World Series, Boston cemented its status as the Miracle Braves with a sweep of the Athletics. Phoenix Suns, 96-99. After 8 games, the Suns were winless and fired their coach, Cotton Fitzsimmons. His replacement, Danny Ainge, then lost his first 5 games, running Phoenix's mark to 0-13. But the late-season acquisition of point guard Jason Kidd, on the right, spurred the team to an 11-game winning streak that allowed the Suns to finish 40-42 and make the postseason, establishing the mark for the worst NBA start ever for a playoff team. New England Patriots, 2007. There was one storyline. This is back to, on page 16. There was one storyline at Super Bowl 57. Could the Patriots finish what they started? It wasn't just that New England was hot early in the season. They stayed that way through the middle and the final end, finishing the regular season 16-0. 2 playoff wins gave Tom Brady and his teammates the chance to become the first NFL team to finish undefeated since 1972. The opponents, however, thought they deserved some attention too. "Everywhere you went, it was all about the Patriots in 19-0, said Giants cornerback R.W. McQuarters. So New York went out and made the world take notice, winning on a TD touchdown after receiver David Tyree kept the drive alive by catching the ball against his helmet. 2 weeks into the season, the Giants had been 0-2. Not an ideal start, but theirs was a perfect finish. Now, what if... Page 20. What if you were the great Bambino? You're hungry. You're having hot dogs for dinner. Delicious hot dogs. You eat a few more than you should, prompting your dad to tell you about how one time legendary slugger Babe Ruth ate a dozen Franks and got so sick people thought he was dying. Cool story, Dad. You see, as you are about to lapse into a food coma, I'm going to go lie down on the couch. Don't fall asleep, he tells you. Eating that much food before going to sleep can give you weird dreams. Sure, you say. You start to say more. But you can barely keep your eyes open. When you wake up, you're in a flannel New York Yankees uniform, and you're a lot bigger than you remember. You've apparently been dozing in a baseball clubhouse. On a nearby table is a Chicago newspaper. The big story is about Game 3 of the 1932 World Series between the Yankees and the Cubs. The article also says that Franklin D. Roosevelt, who is running for president, will be at the game. You remember from history class that it would be elected. He would be elected four times, beginning in 1932. A fellow player comes by and says, "You ready, babe?" It's then that you catch a look in the mirror. You really are Babe Ruth. The fans are merciless at one point, even throwing fruit at you. You're somehow able to swing the mighty bat you're handed and it hit a home run your first time at bat. Next time up, Cubs pitcher Charlie Ruth throws two strikes past you, and the heckling from the players and fans intensifies. You think about making a gesture to show them up, but it's not exactly great sportsmanship. What do you do? Point to the outfield fence or focus on the bat? What do you do? A. You've had enough of the Cubs and their produce-heaving fans. You raise your hand and point. Years later, people will debate your intention. Were you pointing at Root, the dugout? Were you even pointing at all? But you know the truth. You're pointing at the flagpole near the center field scoreboard, and you're telling Root where his next pitch is going. Sure enough, he serves up a curveball, and you pounce on it. The adrenaline from the situation gives you a boost. You launch the ball well past the flagpole. It lands some 490 feet from home plate. Even the Chicago scribes are in awe of it. George Herman Ruth always enjoys a homer under any circumstances, writes the Chicago Tribune, but it's doubtless he ever socked one that gave him the satisfaction that accompanied the second one yesterday. The clout breaks a 4-4 tie, and the Yankees go on to win the game and sweep the series. Go to decision two. And remember what that one was? That one was focus on the bat. The razzing you're receiving from the crowd and the Cubs bench is intense, but you decide to put it out of your mind. But it's not that easy. You can help but be a little distracted, and when Root throws a curveball, you can only hit a weak pop-up that heads towards the stands in foul territory, which happens to be where Roosevelt is sitting. As the Cubs' first baseman settles under the ball, the presidential candidate tries to catch it and knocks it away from the Chicago player. That gives you another chance, and it takes the ire of the Cubs fans off of you and places it on Roosevelt. With your do-over, you hit a single to prolong the inning, and the next batter, Lou Gehrig, belts a go-ahead home run. Not only are Cubs fans livid, but so are baseball fans in general. They're tired of the Yankees winning, and now a meddling politician has handed them a victory. Roosevelt is inundated with hate mail, and a month later, on Election Day, he is routed at the polls by his opponent. Go to decision three. Decision number two. The ensuing winter is uneventful. Roosevelt handily wins the election and vowed to do anything he can to pull the country out of the Great Depression. You return for the 1933 season with high expectations. Things are going pretty well early in the year. One afternoon in Detroit, you smack a couple of homers in the first game of a doubleheader. Between games, you find a clubhouse attendant and give the kid some money to get you a snack. He asks what you'd like to eat, but you don't hear him, so the kid returned with two options, a plate full of hot dogs and some root beer, or a healthy green salad and some mineral water. Which do you eat? C, hot dogs, D, salad. I think we know which one is coming. Decision three. The ensuing winter is eventful. After FDR loses the election, the country plunges further into the Great Depression. You're also getting older, and with people struggling to make ends meet, the team tells you you're probably going to have to take a pay cut. Still, you return for the 1933 season with high expectations. Things are going pretty well early in the year. One afternoon in Detroit, you smack a couple of homers in the first game of a doubleheader. Between games, you find a clubhouse attendant and give the kid some money to go buy you get your snack. He asks what you'd like to eat, but you don't hear him. So the kid returned with two options, a plate of full of hot dogs and some root beer, or a healthy green salad and some mineral water. Do you eat the Franks or the greens? Let's do the Franks. Letter E. You take one, look at the salad, and shove it to the side. Then you try a hot dog. These Frankfurters are positively scrumptious, you bellow. Whatever is that delicious sauce on them? The clubby tells you you're eating a Detroit Coney dog, which is topped with onions, mustard, and spicy chili. After devouring the six he brought you, you send him out for another half dozen, all washed down with bottle and bottle left of root beer. Then it hits you. Maybe a dozen Coneys was too many. And all that chili, yeah. You have a pain in your chest so bad that your manager puts you in a cab and sends you to the hospital. Word gets out that you've had a heart attack and are in bad shape. The doctors ultimately tell you it's only heartburn and it will clear up. But they also remind you that you're 38 and should be taking better care of yourself. But the health scare reminds fans what it is that they love about you. Your larger-than-life qualities, including not just your personality, but also your appetite. 2 years later, you realize it's time to retire, and you go out a beloved hero. When the Baseball Hall of Fame opens in 1939, you are one of the first five inductees, cementing your legacy. Go to scenario six. D. Salads. As much as you love hot dogs, you're not getting any younger or any slimmer. You decide to try the salad. It's not the most delicious thing you've ever eaten, but it fills you up and you feel revitalized. After the game, you have another large bowl of greens and another. In time, you slim down and feel stronger than ever. So strong, in fact, that you decide you have the endurance to resume pitching, something you gave up earlier in your career. While you lose some natural power with age, your improved physique, coupled with not having to play every day as a hitter, prolonged your career. You play well into your 40s, and by the time you retire, you're not only considered the greatest slugger the game has ever seen, but also one of the top pitchers. When you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, you're given two plaques, and for the Babe, the hitter, and the other for Babe, the pitcher. Go to section G. Franks, E. You take one look at the plate of hot dogs, slathered in mustard, and you know two things. One, they're going to be delicious. Two, it's not enough food. So you send the clubby back out to get even more hot dogs as well as a couple of steaks. As you're about to dig in, a reporter and photographer from Life magazine enter the clubhouse. The photo and story become huge news. People are appalled that while the United States is struggling to get out of the Depression, you're spending piles of money on high-end beer and junk food. Not only are you now known as the guy who ended FDR's political career, but you're a glutton as well. You retire 2 years later, still the greatest hitter the game has seen, but one whose reputation will remain forever tarnished. Greens. You already had a pretty big breakfast, so you decide to give the salad a try. It's not your favorite. What I wouldn't give for some buttermilk dressing, you bellow. But it's not terrible, and you feel pretty good. Just then, a reporter and a photographer from Life magazine come into the clubhouse. They snap a photo of you and your simple greens, and it goes viral. Or as much as something in a print magazine can go viral in 1933. Fans can't stop talking about how responsible you become. First, you didn't lower yourself to the level of the taunting fans in Chicago, and now you're eating a simple salad. Pretty soon, you're being held up as an example of the kind of strong moral role model America could use in the White House. With the Great Depression still ongoing, you decide to retire in 1935 and throw your hat in the ring for the next year's presidential election. Before you know it, you're in Washington, D.C., reciting the presidential oath of office. I, George Herman Ruth, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute. Scenario G. Someone is shaking you. It's your dad. It takes a minute for you to realize where you are. You slept all night on the couch. You're bleary-eyed, and the mustard around the corners of your mouth has become really crusty. Sleep well? Dad asked. He muttered. I thought so, he says. So what do you think Mom and I should make for dinner tonight? More hot dogs? The two of you chuckle. Then you turn a little serious. I don't know. I've heard good things about salad. Juju, number 12. This is Fast Facts. We have Juju Watkins, guard for the University of Southern California. And let's see what it says about her here. Fast Facts. As a freshman at USC last year, Watkins was a first-team All-American. She scored 32 points in her first game and set a school record with 51 against number 4 Stanford in February. Watkins, who grew up just 7 miles from the USC campus, led the Trojans to their first Elite Eight appearance in 30 years. She was our 2020 Sports Kid of the Year. Ooh, good job, Juju. And our other fast fact, Joey Logano, NASCAR champion. With a win at the NASCAR Cup Series championship race in Phoenix in November, Logano clinched his third driver's title in the past 7 years. The 34-year-old has won 36 Cup Series races in his career and is one of just 10 drivers to win more than 2 championships. Logano's first Cup Series race win came in 2009 when he was just 19. Good job, Joey. Arden in charge. Sports Kid of the Year, Arden Pela, is using the power of sports to help underserved kids in his community. Very nice pictures here of Arden on pages 34 and 35. Let's find out more about him. At the playground outside Perkins Elementary in San Diego, there is a mural. It features an oversized kid sitting on a small planet Earth, staring off into space. On the mural are the words Suena Grande, and right above that is the English translation, Dream Big. Not far from the mural, on a winter Monday afternoon, cones have been set up around a basketball court and balls have been distributed to a group of 12 or so kids. At the end of the court, a man named Coach Juan is putting some of the kids through drills. At the other end, the person running the clinic looks barely older than the elementary school students. In fact, one is taller than he is. The coach's name is Arden Pela. He's a sophomore at Francis Parker High School. He made the clinic possible, and for that, he's our Sports Kid of the Year. An eye-opening experience. The first time Arden visited Perkins was about 4 years ago. He was volunteering to read the students at the school. On the way, he was chatting with the principal, Fernando Hernandez. As they were talking, Hernandez told Arden that the school recently had to let go of its athletics coach to save money. It was a blow to the school and the students who desperately needed such programs. Many Perkins students live in shelters, in cars, or even in tents near the school. Hernandez estimates that at that time, more than a third of the students were affected. By homelessness, and most of those who weren't came from impoverished backgrounds. In this community, we do not have a YMCA, says Hernandez. We do not have a Little League. If parents wish to take their kids to play these things, they have to travel out of this community. And most of our families do not have a car. They're not mobile. When Hernandez explained the situation to Arden, the 11-year-old was stunned. He loved playing basketball. He was on a club team, and while he knew he was never going to grow up and become the next Steph Curry, he found joy in playing with his friends. So Arden talked to his parents, Surat and Zeynep, about how he could help. They got in touch with Hernandez, and Arden offered to come to the school and teach the kids how to play basketball every Wednesday afternoon. Coaching kids who were roughly his age was not easy. My first year, I wouldn't call it a train wreck because it went well and the kids enjoyed it. But it was hard for me, Arden says. There were times where I was thinking, man, I should just stop doing this because I didn't know if the kids are getting anything out of it. So Arden did what a lot of kids his age do. He spent time on YouTube. He wasn't watching silly videos, though. He was taking in tutorials on how to teach kids the game. He also drew on his experience as an actor. We should note that Arden is also an author who has published 3 books about flying a car, and he's also as a documentary filmmaker. I had a really loud voice, and I was used to shouting and stuff like that, so that helped me a lot, Arden says. And I got a whistle as well. Whistles are important. Eventually, he began to see results. Basketball was giving the kids some badly needed structure. It teaches the kids more life lessons, like working as a team, being hardworking, and the need for sportsmanship, Arden says. At the same time, Arden realized that there were more schools like Perkins that lacked sports programs. He soon realized if he really wanted to broaden the program, he was going to need more resources. So at the beginning of 2020, he started Sports for Kids. The charity raises money to purchase equipment and pay instructors like Coach Juan. But it does more than just fund the clinics that have introduced 750 kids to team sports, including soccer and basketball. Sports for Kids has distributed more than 25,000 pounds of food and mobilized 350 youth volunteers. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.